This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
You'll never find, no matter where you search, someone who cares about you the way I do.
Welcome back, Hollywood Casino Press Box, 11:31 in St. Louis on a Tuesday. I'm Charlie Marlowe. We got Jim Huer, Brian Hoffman, Plowsy, all helping to fill in for Martin and Frank, both in Boston. For the Stanley Cup Final, Game 1 last night, Blues falling 4-2 to the Bruins. And I'm sure that's going to be a heavy part of our content for one of our favorite segments, Five for the Guys, Brian Hoffman.
Time to tee up the hot topics. It's Five for Frank. Brought to you by Greenville University, a liberal arts institution just 45 miles from St. Louis.
All right, give me your most optimistic take following Game 1 last night.
My most optimistic take is that we've seen this before with the Blues team, with this Blues team this postseason. As I mentioned before, there have been some bad games. Sharks, Dallas, last night was a very bad game, and still the score sheet, the scoreboard, when you look at basically it was 3-2 towards the end of that game. I mean, they were still in it with as poorly as they played and as well as the Bruins played second and third period. If a bounce or a penalty all of a sudden goes the Blues' way and they can score a power play goal, you could have a 3-3 game and that thing could have went to overtime. So I would say as bad as the Blues played last night, it still was a pretty close game. And this team has been resilient all postseason. So we'll see what happens on Wednesday. But it would not shock me if the Blues came back and played really well in Game 2.
For me, I don't think I've seen the Blues in this playoff run get outplayed as much as they did in the second period. Outshot 18-3, and as you pointed out, it was a one-goal game in the third period. They get one bounce, the game's going the other way, and it's different. I still like the Blues' chances here. They come out and play one of their best games, they can probably win the game, too, on Wednesday in Boston.
You are NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. You know the questions are coming. The Blues are in the Stanley Cup Final after what happened Game 3 against San Jose. You know the local St. Louis media will ask you questions about the hand pass and replay. But, be honest, in the back of your head, you're thrilled that did not decide the series.
Oh, 100%. And that's why, when that whole thing happened, the next day, I was just kind of thinking about fifth down and what are all the, you know, Don Dankinger, all of the infamous plays in St. Louis history. And if the Blues lose that series, the hand pass, that's then on the Mount Rushmore, right?
Absolutely.
That's on the Mount Rushmore with Dankinger and maybe Spygate, whatever the fourth one is. I don't know. But but now the fact that the Blues won the series, it really won't be mentioned that much.
It'll be forgotten, right.
Because it didn't, I mean, it had an impact, but obviously it didn't lead to the Blues losing that series. So, yeah, if you're Gary Bettman, I mean, think about what Roger Goodell, and I don't feel sorry for him ever, but he had 2 weeks of the Super Bowl where you had to kind of dance around the fact that everybody knows that the Rams got in there because of a terrible call, and the league didn't know, should they make a statement, should he do it at the State of the League address. So yeah, terrible call. I promise you they will change that rule the first time everybody meets this summer after the season is over, but the fact that that didn't lead to a team getting into the Stanley Cup Final and everybody kind of talking about, oh, this lucky Sharks team. They've had every break. Every round they got a break. Gary Bettman is very happy about that.
Bettman's had a reign that's lasted forever and it's too long. And he's had a lot of failures. That would have been another one, but he's so thankful. It'll be forgotten and never talked about again.
You're a top college basketball recruit. You're entering your senior year of high school. Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, Michigan State. All the big schools are looking at you.
Bradley,
Marquette, Mizzou, Missouri State, Rockhurst. But be honest, you're paying pretty close attention to what happens to R.J. Hampton in Australia now that he's announced that he'll be skipping the NCAA entirely to play a year overseas.
Okay, so what is this guy making, by the way? I saw the headline.
I have not seen a salary.
Read the article. But we had this a few years back. It was probably more like, 7-8 years back? Was it Brandon Jennings?
Yes.
That sounds right.
And he went overseas. And this is where I think this is a really interesting argument. Because, look, these players, when they go to an NCAA school and everybody says, oh, they're taken advantage of and they should be paid. And I agree with that. But also, you can go overseas. It's your call. I mean, as an 18-year-old kid, though, do you want to go to China? Do you want to go to Australia?
Yes.
Do you want to go to Europe and play basketball? I mean, that's your choice. And look, you might make whatever it is, $500,000, $1 million. I wonder sometimes, though, honestly, especially with a guy like Zion, if you're one of the creme de la creme players. Now, look, I do think the players should get paid. But how much in marketing money did Zion make from being at Duke and being the front page of ESPN.com freaking every day? Every one of his games was on national TV, whether it's ESPN. And I'm sure the second that he turns pro, gets a ridiculous shoe contract. So I do think there's a lot of value to the marketing that these big-time basketball and football players get if you're playing for Duke, if you're playing for Ohio State, if you're playing for Alabama. That's worth something there. And I'm guessing it's actually worth a lot more than if he went to China and nobody talked about him for a year. You know what I'm saying? All that everybody talked about this whole basketball season was Zion Williamson.
Agreed there. But if I'm a kid, and I don't know what RJ's situation is, but if I'm a kid that's dirt poor and I'm a horrible student, I mean, I don't give a darn about school, I'm definitely looking at it going, you know what, I can go over to some. Now, probably not the best move for any kid at the age of 18 to go over in a country you can't understand the language and all that. But he's not thinking that. He's thinking, I got to get some money for whatever his situation
is. I love the argument. Well, you can't put a price on education. These dudes are doing, like, economics 101 for 3.5-4 weeks. I mean, give me a break. Right after they know they're going to the NBA. They really – I mean, you see kids tweet out all the time or put on Instagram people asking them questions about, are you going to the final? No, I'm going to the NBA. I'm not going to class. I'm not coming to class for this group project. That happens all the time. So, and good for them. They should be making money. So go make it how you can.
You are a loved one of Bill Buckner.
I
know. You're a kid.
A Bill Buckner.
Friend, cousin, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing all these articles out of Boston about how beloved he was and how he handled all of it with humor and class after what happened in 86. Be honest. A little bit's like, you know, piss off with all of this. You treated him like garbage for 20 years.
100%. When I read the story yesterday that Bill Buckner had passed away at the age of 69 and he had Lewy body dementia, the first thing I thought of, and I don't know why, but the first thing that came to my mind was, what would it have been like if there was Twitter and social media in 1986?
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? Like, first of all, he got hate mail. He had to move, basically. But just imagine if he had a Twitter account. I know you can go and not look at Twitter, but man, people are so mean these days. And they will tweet right at you and say the worst things. I hope you die. And this happens to your family and all that. And I do think with Bill Buckner, when you look at a dude who played 22 seasons in the big leagues, 5 different teams, he had over 2,700 hits. He was a really good pure hitter. Obviously, everybody remembers the error. But, man, nobody deserves that. I mean, the last 30 years of his life, he's having to deal with all this. We showed video yesterday on Fox 2 when he finally went back to Fenway. And he waved, and everybody cheered for him. And that was great to see. But, man, that guy put up with just hell for 30 years.
What he put up with, you can't begin to even feel that. I was glad, and I don't know the guy at all, but I was glad to see at one point he was able to come to peace with it, mm-hmm. and he was able to deal with it. If you ever seen the Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, that's a great episode.
It was great, and Bill was great in it, and he played the whole thing up with it. It's really funny. But he was 2 average years for his career away from being a surefire Hall of Famer because he would have had 3,000 hits with 2 more really good years. People forget, in 86, he was playing on knees that, I mean, he was wobbling.
He shouldn't have been out there.
He shouldn't have been out there. But he also had 102 RBIs and over 30-plus doubles for that team, and he shouldn't have ever had the opportunity to play because he was just going out there on guts. He deserves a much better fate, and I was just glad to see towards the end he was able to find peace with it, and like he and Mookie became good friends. And it, you know, for his sake, yes, I was glad to see he finally came to peace with that.
I saw Pete Abraham's obituary in the Boston Globe. The headline, at least on Twitter, Buckner was an exemplary player who handled a high-profile mistake with grace and good humor. And my issue with that is it excuses all the crap he had to deal with.
Right. It never excuses that.
Right. Like that's what I hate about it.
Yep.
All right, finally, five for the guys. You are the St. Louis Cardinals. You're 500 now. You have six games this week at Philadelphia and home against the Cubs. Sunday at 6 o'clock. Are you at, below, or above 500?
Ah, man. I'm going to say that they're still at 500.
Wow, you're optimistic.
How about a 3-3?
I'd say they go 2-4.
That's what I was kind of leaning towards. You're playing good teams here.
Yeah.
I also think, though, the Cardinals did play better this weekend, and I'm not trying to give out participation trophies, but they played a good game on Sunday. Jack Flaherty pitched well, and you're watching some of the arms they're throwing out before even Jordan Hicks gets there. John Gant strikes out four batters in the four outs he gets. Mm-hmm. Carlos Martinez, I think they're bringing him back slowly. They're not going to have him throw a lot of pitches per outing, and Jordan Hicks is really good. He had a terrible outing. I just think the Cardinals are not as bad as they've been in May. Now, you can certainly say they're probably not as good as they were in April either, right? They're somewhere in between. Look, maybe a 500 team is about fair. Maybe a 500 team or a game or two over is about what the Cardinals are right now until they get some of these guys back or Goldie gets going and Carpenter gets going. You know what I'm saying? I mean, until that happens, why should they be better than 500?
Here's the thought. When they're two below, for sure. Come Sunday, I think they're going to be this is going to be a rough week ahead for the Cardinals. But you brought up that point. Maybe this is where they're at, a couple above. If that's what they are, then it's not good enough. So then what do you do moving forward if you're the Cardinal franchise? You made all these moves, and they should be better, especially, as you point out, when Goldie gets going and if Carpenter ever finds whatever it is he needs to find his mojo going again. But the reality is that if they're only five games above 500, you know, that's what they are. That's still not good enough after all the moves they made. And maybe organizational-wise, you got to start assessing a lot of things up top.
Trade players at the lowest point, get 15th, 20th best prospect from a Rangers organization and see them go to Gateway Grizzlies here in a few years and then out of baseball. That's kind of how the MO works.
Yeah, and that's where I think if you kind of also look at what the Cardinals usually do, now probably nothing's going to happen until after the draft. It seems like all the teams focus on the draft, and after that you can kind of start looking towards the trading deadline. But I feel like the Cardinals, they're going to do everything they can to solve this internally until the trade deadline.
I don't
and then
think they can.
Look, okay.
I'm kind of there too.
I don't disagree, but I think they're going to see what happens if an Alex Reyes comes back, if they can put Carlos in a rotation before they go outside externally and make any type of trade. On that note,
that's five for the guys brought to you by Greenville.
Yeah, yeah. Greenville University. And now back out to the phone lines for Ask Dr. Rick. Our guy, Dr. Rick Lehman, on the phone. I got a bunch of questions, Dr. Rick. First of all, how are you and how was your holiday weekend?
Everything was good. Everything was good. I was down in Florida. It was beautiful.
Nice. Okay. So I think Hoffman has some articles, but I have some just questions off the top of my head here because I read an article a couple weeks ago, and I don't remember who wrote it, and I don't remember what publication, but the article debunked makeup sleep, saying that that's not a real thing. And I'm thinking to myself, and this is anecdotal, but it's over the course of my life, I disagree with that because I feel like if I ever have a bad night of sleep or I only get 3-4 hours, that next day I can sleep for 12 hours. So is that a thing or is it not?
All right, so here's the deal. For years, for literally, I would say 20, 30 years, everybody said you cannot make up sleep. You lose sleep, you lost it. And there was two or three articles, I mean, very, very scientific articles, not, you know, Vogue magazine or something, that basically said that's not true, that if you increase your sleep subsequent to a bad period of time, that all your cardiovascular parameters go back to normal. So your perception is right, and that is you can make up sleep. And probably the thing to do is try after, you know, 3-4 hours, 2 hours, a really bad night, of going to bed a little bit earlier, which you're going to want to anyway, and you're probably going to feel better, and you probably should try to do it 2-3 nights in a row.
All right, Dr. Rick, also recently our guy Michael Porter Jr., I feel like for about a year there we asked you two or three questions about MPJ almost every time we had you on. But now He has drop foot, and I have to admit, I do not know what drop foot is. What is drop foot?
So what happened is in his last surgery, and this was kind of an unfortunate deal, and actually the quarterback from University of Central Florida has got a similar situation. Basically, the nerve was irritated or cut or dinged, and so he cannot pull his foot up. So for him to push off, he's unable to push off. So basically, if this doesn't resolve, his non-existent NBA career is over. There's no way to play NBA basketball or really do anything functionally if you've got a drop foot. And you know, so if he's walking and he has to pick his foot up to walk over a twig or a branch or make a normal step, they call it slap foot. Your foot basically slaps down. You can't lift your foot up.
So Martin and Frank are out this week, but it's my job to keep track of Dr. Rickisms, and we got dinged today. Ding a nerve. Jot that down.
And I'm guessing also that Martin and Frank probably did get banged up last night after a tough loss in game one of the Stanley Cup final. Another Dr. Rickism.
I would hope.
Dr. Rick, I got to ask you, I read a story about how there have been 11 deaths for folks climbing Mount Everest in an altitude sickness. Can you describe what altitude sickness is? What happens to the body when it goes up and to the high altitudes like that?
So this is interesting. Before we get to that real quick, you know, so I guess there's so much traffic on this last step. They call it the step of death or the door of death. Everyone just stands there for like 10 hours trying to ascend the last little bit, you know, and it's cold as stink. And so you're standing there trying, you know, it's like you're trying to get in to see, you know, Sammy Hagar or something. And, you know, you're waiting in line. So this has to get fixed because people are just going to die right and left. So altitude sickness is pretty common. And what ends up happening is as you get higher and higher and higher, the lack of oxygen causes your lungs to shut down and you get what's called pulmonary edema, meaning fluid starts to fill up in your lungs. And it's an interesting concept because you could go to heights over and over and over again, never have any problem. And then all of a sudden one time, you know, you're going to Aspen or you're whatever, you're hiking and you're hiking in the mountains. And all of a sudden you get short of breath. Fluid starts to fill up in your lungs, and basically, if you don't go down, you know, 2,000-3,000 feet, you're going to die because you can't breathe. And so, it is a medical emergency. There's medicine to take for it called Diamox, but if you get altitude sickness, initially, what happens? You get a little sick to your stomach, you're a little short of breath, and then basically, your lungs fill up with this fluid, you arrest, and you die. So again, if you start to get it, standing there waiting to get to the top of Mount Everest, you need to immediately descend, which, you know, people spend their whole lives, $30,000 getting there, and everyone's like, well, I'm going to get up there and get my picture because I've done all this, but, you know, now this is the 11th death, and the way the system is now, you're going to see a lot of deaths at Mount Everest unless they just really cut down on the number of ascents.
We're talking with Dr. Rick Lehman. Ask Dr. Rick. Get your questions in on the text line, 855-282-8255. We were talking previously about Bill Buckner, who passed away yesterday at the age of 69 from Lewy body dementia. Two people on the text line wanted me to ask you about that, and one of them says, Buckner was a good player. Lewy body dementia is a horrible way to go. Hallucinations, paranoia, extreme body stiffness, incontinence, etc., takes your self-respect away. Is that basically what you're dealing with when you have Lewy body dementia?
So Lewy body dementia is almost a little bit like ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and basically attacks the neurons in your brain. And absolutely, I mean, it is a horrible death, as is ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease. Terrible, terrible pain. You know, you don't know where you are. You basically have hallucinations. You see little men running around. You can't control your urine or your feces. I mean, it is awful. And Lewy body is becoming more common, and I think it has to do with the toxins and the stuff we eat. But I will tell you, if you get it or you know someone with it, it is a very terrible way to die. And there's a large group actually in California that once you're diagnosed, they believe that you should have doctor-assisted suicide. That's how bad it is.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's
so
terrible.
That's awful. And I'm wondering, what exactly causes it? And could there be any relation at all of just the stress that man went under for 30 years making the error, I'm not saying that caused it, but just the stress and death threats and having to deal with that, could that have led at all to any type of, you know, making it worse at all, or is that just totally not related?
Well, you know, I think that weakens your immune system. That guy went through a lot because he was actually a great baseball player. He had the one obvious disaster with the Mets, and that, you know, basically changed his career. I mean, that's what everyone's going to remember him for. And, you know, the whole process was terrible. Now, I think that may have lowered his ability to fight some of these Lewy bodies. Everybody has some Lewy bodies. Again, it attacks us. The synapses in your neurological system, and I think that I personally believe we're seeing a lot of this dementia because of toxins in the stuff we eat, which you can't get away with. You can say farm the table, say whatever you want, but there's just so much. So I think that probably did contribute at some level. Yeah,
and because you brought it up, doctor assisted suicide. I'm just curious. Obviously, years ago with Dr. Kevorkian, and we heard about that. Is that a state-to-state thing? And where is that argument and that debate right now in America?
It's legal in Oregon and California, I think. It's definitely legal in Oregon. I think they may be debating it or talking about it in California. You know, the conservative states haven't bought into it. And, you know, I think the problem with it is it just lends itself to, you know, your son and daughter want you knocked off for whatever reason. So they go to the doctor and say, hey, we should have doctor-assisted suicide. So there needs to be some way to regulate it. But I think there are cases where people are either in so much pain or the prospect of what's about to happen is so bad. I don't really think it's completely unreasonable. But there has to be, again, some way to monitor it because it's like putting somebody away that you think is psychotic. Well, you know, there's all these cases of somebody saying, well, this guy's psychotic. They're not psychotic at all, but it's for the secondary gain of the kids. Usually that's how it goes. And so you have to protect against that.
Dr. Rick, a new wave in, I guess, buying at fast food restaurants and even grocery stores are like self-checkout. Schnucks has it. I use that a lot when I go grocery shopping. Earlier today, I bought coffee using a touchscreen at the Breadco across the street. You were kind enough to send out an article to me the other day detailing how thoroughly disgusting those touchscreens are.
Right. So you know, there's always some guy out there that's going to ruin your day, right? There's some scientist that says, well, I'm going to go test, you know, E. coli on a touch screen and ruin everybody's month. So they went to McDonald's. And, I mean, you know where this is going. You go to the bathroom. You don't really wash your hands. And you go punch up a Big Mac, some fries, and a Coke. And, you know, what ends up happening is all these E. coli, these organisms and feces, go on the screen, right? So then some scientist says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go test these screens. So they tested all these screens. And sure enough, you know, there's probably nothing dirtier in the whole world than a touchscreen. I don't care if you're at Schnucks, McDonald's, you know, Whole Foods, doesn't matter where you are, those touchscreens are filthy. So, and you know what? Have you ever seen anybody clean one? Of course you haven't. Ah. So, you know, basically you need to do one of two things. You need to wear gloves, which you look like an idiot, or they need to change the game plan in terms of cleaning, and they all need to be clean. The problem is it changes the capacitors and some of the stuff in the screen when you put resin on it or cleaning alcohol on it, and it kind of messes up the screen. So they don't really want you to do that. But, I mean, something's going to have to get fixed because right now, after this article, that's thoroughly disgusting.
Gross. And, Dr. Rick, final question. I know you're a big hockey guy. Your thoughts on game one. Are you concerned even more so for the Blues?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of ways to look at this. They were in last place at the All-Star break or second to last place, and they're in the Stanley Cup final. So let's say they get swept, which isn't going to happen. You'd still say they had one of the greatest seasons they've ever had in the history of the St. Louis Blues. So that's the first thing. But having said that, Boston's a good team. I think getting all crazy about game one, win or lose, is ridiculous. I mean, and even if they lose game two, which I don't think they will, you know, you can't get crazy. So I think you have to see how the series progresses. I think they match up very well. They got great goaltending. I personally believe the Blues win this series. But I think everybody hanging crepe after one game, you know, or two games, you know, you have to see how the whole thing progresses. And right now it was a very close game. The Blues matched up very well. And, you know, I think they win the series.
All right, you heard right there, Dr. Rick. Blues in what? In six?
Seven.
In seven? Blues in seven. Dr. Rick Lehman, thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, that's Ask Dr. Rick right here on the Hollywood Casino Press Box, 590TheFan, 590TheFan.com. Before we take a break, because we have Martin at the top of the 12 o'clock coveted hour, any more fantastic sponsors?
Well, we have the countdown to the free Dotem Open, which is this Thursday and Friday. We want to thank the sponsors for the upcoming Pony Show. Michelob Ultra.
Michelob, did you write that copy?
No. Michelob Ultra, Dukes and Soulard, Truman's and Soulard, St. Louis Digital Media, Rosalita's, Country Cabaret, Gold's Gym, and Birdies for Bipolar. The Post Sports Bar and Grill will be providing lunch on Thursday, while You Craft Eats will be providing it on Friday. Thank you to all of our sponsors that made the 4th annual free Dotem Open possible. And Lakeside Roofing has a reputation, and it's one of reliability, trust, high quality work, and competitive prices. Lakeside Roofing features the finest quality roofing materials, and they provide expert installation. Find them online at lakesideroofing.com.
You know what that reminded me of?
What's that?
When you said Pony Show with not a lot of gusto, because it sounds like you don't usually say that term. No, it reminded me of Tannehill, Pony Show.
Pony Show?
Coming up. Pony Show. All right, we'll take a break. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the other side. It's the Midday Grind. Totally different show.
Completely different.
Totally different. New takes. We got Kenny Wallace at 12:30. And on the other side, Martin Kilcoyne live from Baston. We'll talk, of course, Blues Bruins. And he went to Tony La Russa's office.
I want to hear
Fenway
about
that. Pack earlier this morning.
Is it all Cardinal stuff hung up on the walls at
the
Tony La Russa's?
Henkin jersey?
It's all, I bet you it's all pet stuff. Cats and dogs. Cats and dogs. That's next on the Midday Grind. This has been the Hollywood Casino Press Box on 590 The Fan and 590TheFan.com.